Marisa Peer, I want to warmly welcome you today to the Conscious Evolution Summit.
Marisa, I got you to know with your program, Uncompromised Life. And it supported me a lot, actually, in setting up this summit, because it's a big project for me. And the exercises you guide there really supported me in building up a mindset and an inner attitude what helped me to be with challenges and to really follow my goal and go with all tasks. So there came this idea to invite you to the summit because I found it that helpful.
Well, I'm thrilled to know that. I mean, I've always loved helping people, and my favorite thing to do is to give people little tiny adjustments that have massive, massive benefits. Being in the personal development world for a long time, I find that a lot of things people are asked to do take a long time, like read a book a week or write down 1,000 goals. And I always think if you've got a job, a home, a partner, a child, that's quite enough to do for anyone. And so my thing has always been, how can I help people change in a way that's fast, easy, permanent, and powerful? And that's what I do, and I really love it.
Mm-hmm. And Marisa, I mean, I'm not that experienced like you, because you really work with thousands of clients for many, many years. I work as a coach and a spiritual healer for some years, but what I come across is in a way, I would say, when I really tune into the essence and the center of a person, I recognize so much beauty there and wholeness and perfection in a way. And it always amazes me what kind of covers, what layers are there, so that we can't or have difficulties when we are grown up to access it and to really tap into that beauty and that wisdom which is there in our core, and to kind of really just share it and express it. And I mean, I guess you have very similar experience, and can you share a bit about what you see, what builds up these layers, and how we can kind of then access our core again?
Sure. I mean, I've been teaching my method now for 3 years. I've been asked to teach it for the last 20 years. I could never really get the time to put together a whole training program. But I realized very early on that there's only three things wrong with everybody. And one of the biggest things wrong with everyone is this feeling that they're not enough. But you see, it's what I call a masked feeling. So people come to see a doctor or somebody like me and they say, I'm an alcoholic, or I'm just addicted to shopping, or I take lots of drugs, or whenever things are going wrong, I eat a lot and I keep wanting to lose weight, but I'm in destructive eating, or I always sabotage my success. And I always train my own rapid transformational therapist. It's called What Lies Beneath. I train them to look for what lies beneath. So when people come in with a list of, you know, I'm an addict, or I drink too much, I eat too much, I buy too much, I always ruin everything, I don't treat that. I treat what lies underneath it, which is always this feeling of I'm just not enough. In fact, my method is now being used by quite a lot of rehab clinics, because they have such a high rate of people going back and saying it worked, but it wore off. And even AA, I mean, I would never diminish AA, but their success rate is not high. You have to keep going back all the time in order to stay off alcohol. But when you treat what lies beneath, which is I don't think I'm good enough, and you fix that, you fix everything. So we have what I call a presenting problem. Here's my problem, I'm giving it to you. I'm always pick losers, or I drink too much, I buy too much, I'm on eBay all the time buying stuff, I don't even open the packages when they arrive. It's like an addiction. It is an addiction. But instead of treating the addiction, treat what lies beneath and find out why that client needs stuff. Because when you don't think you're enough, you will always need more food, more alcohol, more drugs, more shopping. A lot of people who hoard also have this same feeling of I'm not enough. And when you feel that you're not enough, there isn't enough stuff in the world to fill that emotional emptiness. And when you feel you're not enough, you can't shop yourself better, you can't eat yourself better, you can't drink yourself better. There's none of the things you can do that will make you feel better because you're treating the symptom and not the cause. And if only we could all treat the cause, treat what lies beneath, treat the underlying feelings that are running every addiction, it would change everything. And I've worked with so many addicts. I've been in rehab 5 times. When I met you and you explained that I didn't think I was enough and that was what was causing me to act out or to self-sabotage, it was such a game changer. But I'm a great believer that you can't heal what you can't feel, and you certainly can't fix what you don't understand. And so just fixing an addiction is really, you're doing half the work. You must treat the cause of the addiction. And when I work with clients, I never say, why did you do that? I say, what happened? When someone says, you know, I went on a diet, I lost 50 pounds and I put it all back on again, I never go, well, why did you do that? I go, what happened to you? And they'll often go, well, you know, I don't know. But in hypnosis, in rapid transformational therapy hypnosis, they'll go back to a scene. And it's so, so interesting to see, you know, my mum's husband looked at me funny. He was very sexual towards me. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm just going to eat everything in the fridge and get so big so he won't look at me anymore. Or my dad used to hit me a lot. And I decided if I could only be big, I'd hit him back. And so we need to be taught that the mind has a very simple job. Your mind's job is not to keep you happy. It's to keep you alive based on what we want. It's not actually great odds at all. And the way our mind keeps us alive is it listens to the words we use. It listens to our dialogue. And when we say, I just want to be big, if only I was big, if I was big, I'd get noticed. If I was big, I'd be safe. If I was big, I wouldn't get hit or hit on. The mind says, well, that's a direct request. You want to be big? Let me make you bigger. And I teach again all of my therapists that almost all of our ailments and issues have a role, a function, a purpose, and indeed an intention. And if the weight has a role, if it's to protect you from being lusted after or looked at sexually, or to make you bigger because you were always the youngest and you got hurt, then no amount of dieting is going to get rid of that because it has a role. In the very same way that if your chronic migraines prevent you going to work, so therefore you can never disappoint your father who expects so much of you, those migraines aren't going away anytime soon. And it's terribly important to understand that so many ailments do have a role, a function, a purpose, and an intention. And it's only ever going to be two things. I need to protect you, or I need to punish you. People say, really, would I punish myself? Oh, yes. I work a lot with infertile women, and they almost always go back to having a termination and saying, I don't deserve to have a baby now. I work with so many people who say, I did something really bad when I was a kid, and I don't deserve to be happy because I had sex with my best friend's boyfriend. I ran off with my friend's husband. I stole something when I was 12. But you're allowed to make a mistake. You're not really allowed to beat up your own body and hurt it. So it's really showing people that the mind's job is to keep you alive. It does that based on how you dialogue with yourself. And how you dialogue with yourself is something that you are absolutely free to change. And if we could only be taught in school that every word you say, every thought you think becomes a blueprint that your mind, body, and psyche work to make your reality. When you say people don't like me, no one likes me, I'm just a loser. If you say that every day, you form an energy around that. And then you go out into the world and you reflect that energy. And people pick it up and they don't like you any more than getting on a horse with fear would make the horse not like you because it's picked up your fear. So we make our beliefs, our beliefs make us, and then we go out into the world and find that the world starts to actually match and duplicate and mirror exactly what we believe. But the very good news is you can change those beliefs at any time at all, and it just needs a little understanding of what is going on. And so I always think it's a good idea to remember this. Your body must act in a way that matches your thinking. It has no choice at all. You must act in a way that absolutely replicates your thinking. Your body can't change that, but you can change it because you can change your thoughts. If you say, I knew I'd get sick because that fish didn't smell quite right. I knew I'd get a cold as I went out and my hair was wet. I knew that would go wrong. I knew that guy on Tinder would ghost me. I knew I'd get dumped. I knew I wouldn't get that job. I knew that IVF wouldn't work. When you say that, you're actually making it more likely that it won't work. And all you have to do is change that to, it's working. My mind is making it work, because your mind has vast powers to keep you well, to keep you happy, to keep you positive, to make you successful. But if your language is all negative, it really can't do it.
So it's really a lot about becoming conscious of your internal conversations in a way. And what helps us, and what helps us, if we look at the world, because this is reflecting our inner conversation, make it visible, basically, what we experience then in the world.
Yeah, and if you're not sure, ask your friends and family, what kind of words do I use a lot? For instance, I worked with a top model, and her word was terrifying. Everything was terrifying. I've got this new job, it's terrifying. I get on a plane and a guy's hit on me, it's terrifying. I'm like, you know, that's not really terrifying. One day that will stop, and maybe you'll miss it. But if you think being hit on is terrifying, wear some glasses, put on a baseball hat, read a book, you know, just pull your hat down. It's not terrifying, but you see, the words you use become your reality. And so many of us use very powerful words to describe things that aren't powerful. We'll say, this commute is killing me. My boss is driving me mad. This is a client from hell. My kids are making me insane. I'm going out of my mind with stress. I'm at maximum bandwidth. I'm at the end of my rope. I can't take another minute of this. It's a nightmare. It's a disaster. It's hell. It's a living hell. And what are they talking about? They're talking about the commute to work. They're talking about the queue in a store to buy their weekly shopping. They're talking about their children. They're talking about their job. But you see, when you use words like, this is hell, this is a disaster, this is a nightmare, this queue at the airport is a nightmare, really, you're queuing up to go on an amazing holiday. You have the money to pay for it, and the queue is frustrating, it's vexing, it's boring, but it's not a nightmare. But when you say, the line at the airport is a nightmare, the line in the store is torture, the backup of traffic on the freeway makes me want to kill myself, your body has no choice but to believe you. So your body has to react to your words, but you can change them. And it, those simple little things, like, instead of saying hell, nightmare, disaster, how about saying, it's a challenge, it's a situation. I was flying to Jamaica a couple of years ago. Next to me came back to her seat, and she shouted out, oh my God, disaster. And everyone on the plane looked, and the stewardess ran up. She said, my movie didn't pause when I went to the bathroom. It's like, wow, it's really not a disaster. That's just annoying. But you can rewind it, and in 3 minutes, you're back to where you were. But it's extraordinary that we use these powerful, powerful negative words to describe everyday events. My head is killing me. I'm starving. I'm dying of hunger. Well, we know that isn't true. My kid makes me want to pull my hair out. You know, no, it doesn't. Your child is just age appropriate. So if you want to change your life, there's some very simple things that you can do. One of them is pay attention to your language. Don't use words like disaster, nightmare, hell, and says it's a challenge, it's a situation. Here's a great thing to say. So, say my kids are out of control. Say my children are age appropriate. If you want an obedient thing, get a fish. But you know, you can't make cats and dogs sit there all day and be perfect. So use better words. My kids are age appropriate. My boss is a challenge. Yes, the commute to work is a bit boring, but I can make it better by having great stuff to listen to. You know, everything is a choice. And there's lots of things that you can do that will change your life. And one of my favorites is this expression. I'm choosing to do this and I'm choosing to feel great about it. I'm choosing to eat salad instead of fries and I'm choosing to feel great about it. I'm choosing to go to the gym because I want to have a healthier body and I'm choosing to feel good about it. I'm choosing to spend all weekend working on my presentation, building my website, building my business, and I'm choosing to feel great about it. Because when I was saying earlier that every word you speak is a command, when you say, I've got to work all weekend on my website, that's not fair, or I've got to write this presentation, it's so boring, or it's not fair that all my friends can eat pizza and I'm having salad, or it's not fair, I've got to go to the gym to be fit, or my friends eat whatever they like. Well, maybe it isn't fair, but half the world is in the same position as you. When you say, I don't want to do this, your mind will do everything at its disposal to distract you. Mm-hmm. And when you say, I'm choosing to do this, it's such a different feeling. You see, everything, the way you feel about everything is down to two things, the pictures you make in your head and the words you say to yourself. Like when I was in India, and they have cows everywhere, they don't walk down the street eating a juicy burger. Because of them, a juicy burger would be insulting to this cow that gives them milk. A vegan would never go, wow, look at that burger, isn't it amazing? But someone who loves me would go, oh, isn't it beautiful? So it's all relative. The way you feel about anything is down to the pictures you make in your head and the words you say to yourself. But we should be taught at a very, very early age that we get to choose the words, we get to choose the pictures. And when you make the words and the pictures positive, it changes your entire life for the rest of your life. Like you can choose to say, I hate flying, I'm going to be killed in a plane crash, it's claustrophobic, you can't get out, you're trapped up there. Or you could decide to say, which is true, it's actually the safest method of traveling ever, and it's a great opportunity to relax, to read, to sleep, to watch a movie, do whatever you want. You know, we don't realize how much choice we have to feel good, to be well, to be healthy, to be amazing. And when you look at people who are unhappy and go, what's wrong? They go, it's the weather, it's my boss, it's my kids, it's my partner. But there are a lot of people in the world who are millionaires with amazing bodies and love in their life or miserable, because it's something out there is not making you unhappy. It's something in here. And we all try to change out there when all you have to do is make some adjustments in here. Use better language. Say, I'm choosing to do this. Don't let in destructive criticism and massively praise yourself. In fact, if you did four things, if you massively praised yourself every day, and massively praising yourself is saying things like, I'm lovable, I matter, I'm significant, I'm enough. If you did not let in destructive criticism, if you use those words, I'm choosing this and choosing to feel great about it, and if you took full responsibility for how you feel by changing the words and pictures in your head, your life would be incredible. And these, all of those four things are easy. They don't cost anything. They take no more than a matter of minutes. And the effects are life-changing. There's so many things we can do to feel great. But we're just not taught them enough, and we should be. And that's changing, because at the moment, my programs are going into schools. My I'm Enough program is going into schools. I'm negotiating to put it into some prisons. It's going into some rehab facilities. So I'm really pleased that the world is waking up to the power of changing yourself rather than giving that to a doctor or saying, if only I had a kid, I'd be happy. When I have a partner, I'll be happy. When I get a promotion, I'll be happy. When I've got a better job. There is no destination called happiness. It's happiness is the journey. Happiness is an inside job. You've got to be happy right now, and then you get happier all the time.
That's funny, because I have a sign in my kitchen and it says on it, if you want to be happy, be it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's like if you want a friend, be one. There's so, you know, there's so many ways we should really be taught this stuff in school, you know. What can I do to be happy? You know, we're all taught, especially when we're learning about business or relationships, we're all taught the same thing. If you can communicate well, you'll be really good at business. Your relationship will be better if you have great communication skills. And yet no one says, actually, you know what? If you can communicate with yourself, if you can communicate with your own mind in a very effective way, your life will be extraordinary and you will be unstoppable. And many, many teachers write to me and say, you know, I'm having all my class make a little work of art saying I'm enough. I have each kid have a little card on their desk saying I'm enough. I have them stamp it on their hands. I have them write it on their bags. And it's so effective. And so the message of I'm enough is really, it is taking the world by storm. Every day I get little pictures of iced cupcakes or cookies or another way to say I'm enough. People will send me a picture of a car and someone's written it in the dust on the car, or they've written it in sand, or two of them have put it in seeds in the garden. So when the flowers grow, they say I'm enough. A mother recently showed me how she printed it on her children's pillowcase. So it's the last thing they saw when they went to bed and the first thing when they woke up. And I thought that was such a beautiful thing. But we're always looking for more ways to put I'm enough into our life. And if your readers would like to know how to feel they're enough, well, I recommend that you first of all change all your passwords so they contain the word I'm enough. Obviously, you need some squiggles and dots and asterisks, because we don't want to make hackers' lives easy. But if you all your passwords had I'm enough in it, if you had it written all over your mirrors, if it was on your fridge and fridge magnets, if, like I've got quite a lot of works of art and cushions that say I'm enough, and if you set your phone alerts to go off twice a day and your phone wallpaper said I'm enough, by that very level, you are reading it, writing it, hearing it every day, and it will sink in, rather like lip salve on chapped lips, and it will start to nourish you from the inside. And there are so many ways to embrace I'm enough. I mean, I have a program called I'm Enough, which I'm very proud of. One of the reasons I love it is people write to me and go, wow, I just couldn't believe how quickly this changed my life. It's an 8-step program that takes you through everything that makes you know you're enough. Because so many people think, well, I don't really feel good enough. I'll buy something to make me feel better. Or I'll try and get some guy or some girl to like me, then I'll feel better. I'll try and make my friend make me better, my partner, or this child, or I'll try to feel better. But everything you want without question is because of how it makes you feel, whether that's a puppy or a pair of new shoes or a nice dinner. Whatever it is that you're looking for, it's because you think it will make you feel better. When you start and end each day saying, I am enough, then you have the feeling anyway, because everything you're trying to get is to make you believe you're enough. But stuff can't make you feel enough. If it could, you go, okay, how many pairs of shoes have I got, how many shirts have I got, how many candles have I bought trying to feel enough? But clearly, if it worked, you wouldn't need more. So the key is to say it to yourself. It doesn't mean you can't like stuff, but it means that you won't need more. Because when you think you're not enough, you will always need more. And when you know you're enough, you won't need more. And that's a wonderful thing.
And in a way, Marisa, I know that you work with hypnosis. And I guess when we are in this special state of consciousness in a trance, in a hypnotic state, I guess somehow this message can reach us even on a deeper level than we maybe reach it with reading it or telling it to ourselves. Is it like that?
Hypnosis is a wonderful, wonderful tool. I'm such a fan of hypnosis. It is, after all, the basis of all psychotherapy. The great thing about hypnosis is that one of the rules of the mind is the mind learns by repetition. When you repeat something, it goes in. So when clients come to me with all their issues, and I think I've seen people over the last 30 years for everything you can think of, I normally use hypnosis to go back and find out why. Why do you feel the way you feel? So when people come into me and say, I have low self-esteem, or I'm not confident, or I just can't do confrontation, I can't speak in public, they often want to add, I've always been this way. And I say, no, you haven't. There isn't a baby on the planet born that's self-conscious. Because after all, your very first experience in being born is being assessed. People look at you, mom, dad, doctors, nurses, relatives, look at you, but you go, oh, look, isn't he beautiful? Isn't she gorgeous? And no baby says, oh, don't look at me. I'm having a bad hair day, or I've got milk spots, or I'm drooling. Babies love attention, and they absolutely believe they're worth it. So we don't really have acquired fears. When we're born, we have some driving needs, which is I must find connection, and I must avoid rejection. But babies don't fear rejection. They believe that they're worthy, which is why they demand attention. And so the great thing about hypnosis is going back and having a look at why. Where did you get this belief from? How did you get it? Why did you get it? And that's so fascinating for clients, because in the hypnosis, they begin to see, oh, right. When I was 4, my dad left and never came back. When I was 4, and my dad went off with another woman and had a child and gave that new baby lots of attention and me none, I believed I wasn't lovable. And I can see now I made that decision and I came to that conclusion with 4 years of experience on the planet. At 4, I decided I wasn't good enough. At 3, I decided I wasn't lovable. And I've carried that with me my whole life. And now I'm 43, I can understand it is no longer necessary or relevant or appropriate. It isn't even interesting to believe what I believed when I was 4. After all, we don't believe in Father Christmas when we're 34. We don't believe in the tooth fairy. Why would we still believe another belief, another fairy story or lie? And yet if you look at people like Marilyn Monroe, Michael Jackson, Princess Diana, George Michael, so many beautiful people, Heath Ledger, you can see how they had bought into not being enough when they were tiny, when they'd had a few years life experience, but they don't understand how to give it up because you learn what you live. You make your beliefs and then your beliefs make you, and your belief is I'm not enough. And you really believe that, you start to act in a way that matches that. So let's imagine you have a belief, I'm not enough. People are always disappointed in me. So if your thought is I'm not enough, then the feelings you're going to feel around that will match that thought, I'm not enough. And so it makes me feel very sad. It actually makes me feel quite angry and bitter and resentful because everyone else is having a better time than me. So now I've got a thought and I've got a feeling and now I'm going to have an action. And if my thought is I'm not enough, I probably will have inaction. I'm not going to ask people. I'm not going to go to the office and go, hey, I'm going to have a barbecue on Saturday. Would you all like to come? Or who wants to go and see this play? And so you'll do very little. You won't take risks. And the inaction just supports the belief, I'm not enough. But if you were to just change that belief and say, okay, let's play a game. Let's say, I'm enough, I'm enough, I'm enough. The mind learns by repetition. Let me repeat it every day. Like Marissa said, write it in my passwords, have it where I'm always reading it. Maybe even have a little post-it notes on my computer. Now I'm going to think that thought. Now I'm going to feel a different feeling. I'm going to feel, well, if I'm enough, I can take some risks. I can talk to people. Of course, I can ask someone out, invite someone around to my house. They can't reject me because I know I'm enough. So the thought is different. The feeling is different. And now I feel I'm enough. What is the action? Well, I'm going to speak to people. I'm going to take risks. I'm going to talk to people. I'm going to believe I can talk to anyone because I'm enough. And so now I've got this good loop. It's a bit like when I work with children, they go, I'm not good. I'm not good at school. I'm not smart. How does that make you feel? Well, I feel very sad and very scared. And I never put my hand up in class because I'm not smart. So now my actions are all about feeling inadequate. And if you just change that one thought, well, I'm smart, I'm great at learning, I've got a great mind. My mum said I've always been clever. How do I feel? Well, I feel brave. I feel brave because I'm smart. I can answer questions in class. I can ask for help without thinking I'm an idiot. And so my actions are better. So we have these looping thoughts. Your thoughts control your feelings control your actions control your events. And then they go right back to justifying the thought. And it's a very negative loop, but you can make it a positive loop. But everything starts with a thought. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to change them.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, when I listen to you, Marisa, it comes really back to becoming aware of the responsibility we have, what we think, how we interpret what is happening, and really seeing how powerful we are, basically, and how we could maybe use this power in a more beneficial way for us and for others.
Sure. Well, the word responsibility, when you break it down, it means an ability to respond. If you are response able, then you are able to respond. And so, again, you have to go back to your thoughts, listen to your thoughts, be aware of the language you use. Hypnosis is very good at taking you back and showing you how, why, and where you got to be the way you are. But if you don't have a hypnotherapist to hand, you can still do that by just noticing how you talk all the time and making a decision to change it and then rewiring your mind. You see, we upgrade our software all the time. We know that our computer might get a bug and a virus, and if it does, it will work less effectively. We have our own bugs and viruses, mm-hmm. and we need to upgrade our own software. We need to upgrade the software in here and work better by not allowing ourselves negative self-talk. It really is a luxury that you simply cannot afford. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very easy to be negative, and might be interesting for your listeners to understand that thousands of years ago, you survived if you were negative. If you left the house and thought, now there might be a snake, I better be careful, I should look out on the horizon and just be aware of animal tracks. And you see, when we lived in primitive times, being negative kept us alive. We would always check, you know, is this food fresh? What's going on here? And to this day, for instance, if you walk home at night and you're a young girl, you don't put your headphones in and walk away from the traffic wearing a very short skirt, because you have to sort of be aware, I better wear a long coat. I should always walk facing the traffic. I should always walk away, you know, kind of in the middle of the pavement so I'm safe. And that we could say that's being negative. But that's the modern day equivalent of being negative, think what could go. I could be abducted. I could be hurt. I could get run over because I'm crossing the road with my head on. I'm walking around looking at my phone. I'm going to smash myself into a lamppost. So being negative did have a benefit. It kept us alive. But actually, we've taken it way too far. We are over negative. It had a benefit once. You know, to this day, I mean, I could say every time I lock my doors and put my alarm on, I'm being negative. I'm expecting someone to break into my home. But I'm not expecting it. I just sleep better knowing that my front door is locked. Actually, when I'm in LA, I never shut my door because it's a different environment there. I feel completely safe. But just because you are wired to survive by being a little bit negative, that doesn't mean you should be completely negative. It's really, when you're negative all the time, it has a horrible effect on you. I mean, you can choose. You could go, okay, I'm going to choose to be negative, or I might choose to be positive. And it is a choice. Mm. But what you can't choose is what you do to your body when you're negative. What you do to your immune system, your nervous system, your digestive system, what you do to your whole system by being negative. So you can choose how to dialogue with yourself, but you cannot choose the effect it has on you when you're negative. And that's why being negative is a luxury that none of us can afford, and why we should all learn to be positive. Just flip everything over. This is all going to go wrong. It's going to be great. I'm going to miss the train. There's always another. I'm going to miss the flight. No, it'll be okay. I have enough time. That's going to make me sick. I have a great immune system. They won't like me. Of course they will like me. I'm likable. I'm scared of my kid's teacher. She's just another person. She's no better than you. And you're equal to everyone, and everyone is equal to you. So just changing your language really does change you in the most powerful way.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you for that reminder. I really can sense the power in that. And Marisa, would it work for you that you maybe kind of guide us a bit in an hypnotic exercise, taking the audience with us?
I could do something now. Let me see what would be the most effective thing. There's something called tagging that I talk about a lot. So when a child is little and they see an event like mom hasn't got enough money to pay the electricity, or mom can't afford to buy new school shoes, or they're always fighting about money, a small child will look at that event and think, we don't have any money. And it will always be like this. And then you get millionaires who can't spend money. Or mom has a succession of boyfriends who never stay. And that child forms a belief. Love can be there for a little while, but it doesn't last. And so a child will look at any event and they'll add on these tags. It will always be like this, or be like this for the rest of my life. I have no power to change it. And so what we could do is do some hypnosis and go back to where you got this belief that it will always be like this. And I can't change it, and then you can change it. The other thing that I don't know if we'll have time to do today, but it's certainly worth looking at, is that when illnesses have a role, function, purpose, and intention, they're not going to go away. But if you just sit yourself at home and say, okay, I'm the headaches I've been having for 10 years. And if those headaches wanted to be my friend, I mean, how bizarre is that? But if those headaches wanted to help me, how could they help me? And then you'll suddenly realize that the headaches got you out of having to do chores you hated as a kid. I was working with someone recently who had terrible eczema. And she said, you know, when I was a kid, I got a lot of attention having eczema. My mum had to take me to see a dermatologist, put special creams on me. I got special food. It's the only way I ever realized that I was mattered and was significant, because I came from a family of 7 kids. And so there is the role and the purpose, but 30 years later, you don't need it. So if any of you have any issues, any ailments, could be physical. You know, doctors will tell you that 70% of people going to emergency room in a hospital have issues that are real. The symptoms are real, but they are caused by emotions. Mm-hmm. Constipation, upset stomach, skin breaking out, tension, headaches. And although the doctors want to treat you and will give you medication, they understand that so many of these physical issues are caused by our thoughts, our beliefs, our feelings. And you can't really medicate those away. But we learn what we live. You know, it's important to see that we learn what we live. If you live in a house where there's never enough, then you'll go into that sense of lack. You'll always need more. If you live in a house where you never get praised and only criticized, then you'll find that you actually reject praise. But adding criticism, I said to you, you know, I love the flowers. You go, oh, they're dead, you know, they're just about to die. Or I love that speech you gave, and you went, well, actually, I missed the best bit. It really could have been better. Mm-hmm. So people who are not used to praise not only reject, they add in criticism, because we are wired to recreate what is familiar. You know, not long ago, really, certainly 500 years ago, what kept you alive was the familiar. You lived in a walled city, you did the same stuff, you hung out with the same people, you ate the same food, and familiar made you safe. And anyone with small children will notice how they like the same cereal in the same spoon, and they want the same story every night and the same video every day, because familiar made us safe. And we are hardwired to like what's familiar and to reject what's under it. That is a fact. But here's another fact. You can make anything at all familiar. Praise. If you praise yourself, it becomes familiar. If you stop criticizing yourself, that criticism becomes unfamiliar. So remember, your brain is hardwired to seek what is familiar and to run away from what is unfamiliar. So why we date the same person over and over again. People who criticize us, leave us, put us down, because we're always trying to find something familiar and change the ending. And really, life is too short for that. It's better to change the beginning. But let's do a little hypnosis to look at where we got our I'm not enough tags from. So if you want to make yourself comfortable and look at the screen, there are many, many ways to go into hypnosis, but here's the best way, and that is to roll up your eyes and look up as if you're trying to look into your own eyebrows, and while you're keeping your eyes up, close the lids down. So we can all just practice that together. Just roll up your eyes as if you're looking into your own hairline, and keeping your eyeballs up at the same time, just close your eyelids right down, all the way down. And if you can do that, then you'll be great. And many of you might find you've got a slight fluttering sensation going on, and that's a good thing. That's called REM, rapid eye movement. So open your eyes. And let's begin. Obviously, you need to switch off your phone, make sure you're not going to be disturbed, and then just sit with your feet apart and your hands apart, and let's do exactly what you did before. Again, look up, as if you're looking into your own eyebrows, keeping your eyes glued to a reel or imagined spot overhead. Breathe in, breathe out. Take another deep breath, breathe in, breathe out. And just one final time, breathe in, keep your eyeballs up, and keeping your eyeballs up. Every time you blink, deep hypnosis is coming upon you. So this time as you exhale, keep your eyeballs up, but just close your eyelids right down, all the way down. As your eyelids shut down, the muscles and nerves in and around your eyes are becoming heavy, droopy, drowsy. Your eyelids are starting to feel right now as if they have been glued shut, sealed shut, locked tight. Just forget all about your eyes and just allow your eyeballs to move to any position they want to. And I want you to drop your chin so you really feel that same looking down feeling that you might feel as you look over a balcony or down a flight of stairs. You are looking down 10 steps. You have that looking down sensation right now. You're moving on to step 10. As each muscle, every nerve turns loose, lets loose, and you go deeper. And now you're taking step 9, going deeper into an awareness of yourself. You are taking step 8. And you can see your feet connecting to every step as you take step 7. You can hear your feet connecting to each step as you take step 6. You can see your feet, hear your feet, feel your feet connecting to every step. And every step is taking you deeper, further into a powerful level of hypnosis. You're taking step 5, you're halfway down, going even deeper still. You're taking step four as each muscle. Every nerve turns loose, lets loose, and you go deeper. You're taking step three and two as you gently, calmly, easily move on over to an even deeper level. You are taking step one, just go deeper, drift deeper, sink deeper. And every time I click my fingers and say the words, go deeper, drift deeper, sink deeper, you are simply going deeper and deeper into an awareness of yourself. And hypnosis is not about being asleep. It's about being receptive to suggestions. I'm going to show you right now how very, very receptive you are. So I want you to simply put your attention onto your fingertips. And as you focus on your fingertips, I want you to imagine an incredible tingling sensation in every fingertip. You can feel a tingling sensation in the tips of your fingers. And as you focus on that tingling, it's increasing all by itself, and you can just notice that happening. You can notice the tingling moving down your fingers, moving across your palms. And if you want to, you can instantly move that tingling from your fingertips to the tips of your toes. Focus on that tingling in your toes. And you focus on that tingling. As you focus on it, it is increasing all by itself. And again, you can just notice that happening. Now I want you to forget about your fingers and toes and think about something else. You were born certain that you were enough. There is not a chance in the world that you were born feeling you weren't enough. Babies cry on demand. They cry for attention. They are born with a belief that says, I'm enough, because when you're in the womb, every need you had was met. When you were in the womb, it was like being in Hawaii. It was always 75 degrees. You had 24-hour room service. You were connected to someone else. You always felt their heartbeat. So you were born with a very interesting belief. I'm enough. I'm lovable. I matter. You were born needing to find connection and avoid rejection. And somewhere, somehow, you began to believe that you were just not enough. Not lovable enough, not intelligent enough, not interesting enough, smart enough, beautiful enough. And once we invest in that, we tend to keep it. But today you're going to find out where you ever got that belief from, and then you're going to give it up. So already your brilliant mind knows exactly how, where, why, and when you ever acquired this belief that you are not enough. And right now, on the count of five, you are drifting right back to a vivid, vital, crucial, absolutely significant scene that is all to do with how, where, why, and when you got this belief that you are not enough. On the count of four, you're becoming years younger. On the count of three and two, you are becoming smaller, lighter, shorter. On the count of one, years, months, weeks, days are peeling away from your body. You are drifting right back right now to a vivid, vital, crucial, absolutely significant scene that is all to do with how, why, where, and absolutely when you ever believe that you are not enough, not trying at all, just be there. And as I click my fingers, it's rather like you are switching on your computer. A picture is warming up and coming into focus in this scene in your mind where you are right now. You're going to find immediately you know the answer to these questions. Where you are now in this scene, is it daytime or is it nighttime? Are you on your own or is anybody with you? How old are you about? And here's the only question that matters. What are you doing, seeing, feeling, what are you experiencing? I want you to stay in that scene in your imagination. Feel what you felt then. See what you saw then. And as I count to three and click my fingers, your ears are opening. You can hear exactly what you heard then on the count of 1, 2, and 3. Your ears are open. You can hear what you heard then. And you can see what you saw then. And I want you to stay in that scene for just a few minutes. And as you stay in that scene, I want you to fully understand what happened to you. What went on in that scene that made you believe that you're not enough? Because here's something that is so true. Scenes don't really affect you. Events don't really affect you. But the meaning you attach to an event, that completely affects you. The interpretation you put upon an event affects you. So you may go back to a scene where you're not getting love. But if the meaning is, well, I don't get love because I'm not lovable, my sister, my brother, my friends are better than me, that's what affects you. So look at the scene. Stay in that scene. Look over it. Look around it. Look right through it. And as you look over and around and through that scene, really understand the meaning you attached to that scene, the interpretation you gave to that scene. This is how it is, and it will always be like this. This is how it is, and since I'm just a kid and I can't change it, it will always be like this. It will be like this forever and ever. It will be like this for the rest of my life. Because that simply isn't true. It was true when you were a child. It felt like that. And now it's not. So let's go back to another scene again to do with not believing that you are enough. On the count of 5, you are drifting back to another vivid, vital, crucial, absolutely significant scene that is all to do with how you got to be the way you are. On the count of 4, you are becoming years younger. On the count of 3 and 2, you are becoming smaller, lighter, shorter. On the count of 1, years, months, weeks, days are peeling away from your body. You're drifting right back right now to a vivid, vital, crucial, absolutely significant scene that is all to do with how you ever began to believe that you are not enough, not trying at all, just be there. And again, it is rather like switching on your television. A scene is springing to mind, this scene where you are now. Is it daytime or nighttime? Are you inside or outside? Are you on your own or is anybody with you? And most of all, what are you doing, seeing, feeling, and experiencing? And I want you to stay in that scene and just be aware of how old are you? Are you with anyone? Are you inside or outside? Is it daytime or nighttime? And the only question that matters, what are you doing, seeing, feeling? What are you experiencing? As I count to 3, your ears are wide open. You can hear exactly what you heard then on the count of 1, 2, and 3, your ears are open. You can hear someone saying something to you about you. In your line of hearing, you can hear something. You can hear what you heard then. You can see what you saw then. And you can feel what you felt then. And as you look over and around and through that scene, you can see, oh, right, yes, this is certainly an illuminating moment. This is my aha moment. This is a light bulb moment. I can see how and where and more than anything why I ever believed I was not enough. So stay in that scene. And be aware that when you have been on the planet for just a few short years, when you were a young kid, you formed an opinion, you came to a conclusion, you came to a belief, I'm not enough. And you based it on a scene. And that scene hurt you. But the meaning you attached to that scene, the interpretation you took from that scene hurt you so much more. And now it never has to hurt you again because you are free to change the meaning and to change the scene. And just before we move on to the third and final scene, let's look at something else in that scene. You are a dependent child. Children are dependent, not independent. And in a scene where it appears that someone doesn't like you, or you don't have what other kids have, you form another belief, was what I call a tag. It will always be like this. It will be like this for the rest of my life. It will be like this forever and ever. That is not true. It's a tag you put on. And it's a tag you are going to rip off. So just look over, around, and through that scene, then put it to one side, and let's go back to the third and final scene. The most vivid, the most vital, the most crucial scene of all. On the count of 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you are drifting back to another vivid, vital, crucial, absolutely significant scene, all to do with this same feeling, this same belief, I am not enough. You are becoming younger, smaller, lighter, shorter. Years are peeling away from your body. You are drifting right back, right now, not trying at all, just be there. This scene where you are now, is it daytime or nighttime? Are you inside or outside? Are you on your own or is anybody with you? And again, as I count to three, you can be absolutely aware of what you are feeling and experiencing. You can hear what you heard then. Your ears are open. 1, 2, and 3. And I want you to hear exactly what you heard then, to see exactly what you saw then, and to feel what you felt then. Again, I want you to look over and around and right through this powerful scene. And as you look over and around and through that scene, I want you to have another aha, illuminating light bulb moment as you think, oh, I see now. When I was just a kid, just a child without much logic, without much reason, I believed a belief that I've held on to for years. I believed I'm not enough. And I also believed it would always be this way. It would be this way forever and ever. As a kid, I could not do anything to change that situation. So I became helpless and hopeless. I locked on to a belief I'm not enough. And I've carried that with me all my life. And now I can let it go because that scene did not affect me anything like as much as the beliefs I believed about the scene. And my beliefs are mine to change. Your beliefs are yours to change. So I want you to put those three scenes together and to understand, what is one word that you might say is there in all the scenes? Is it abandonment? Is it rejection? Is it not enoughness? Look at scene 1, 2, and 3 and understand what they have in common, how those scenes affected you, how those scenes led you to feeling that somehow you're just not quite enough. That isn't true. It's never been true. But when you believe it, it feels true. So let's shatter and smash and end that forever. I want you to go back to scene 1. And I want you to say out loud, that is not me, because I'm going to lead you and you are going to finish the sentence. For instance, if your father left when you were 3, if your mother preferred your little brother or sister, you're going to go, that's not me because I'm not 3. And even though I didn't have a father to love me, I'm lovable now. Even though my mother may have preferred my brother or sister, I'm here. The universe wanted me to be here and I am lovable. I don't need my mother to love me because I am able to love and celebrate myself every day. So let's go repeat after me out loud. That is not me. And that is not me because, and I want you to finish that sentence. I need you to really state it to the screen. That's not me because. Finish that sentence. And that will never be me ever again for the rest of my life because. Finish that sentence. And one final time out loud. That cannot be me. Ever again because finish that sentence. And now let's go back to scene two. And I want you to say the same thing. Repeat after me out loud. That's not me because. And finish that sentence. That can never be me ever again because. And finish that sentence. That will not be me for the rest of my life because. Finish that sentence. And just one more time in scene. Remember that if you need longer after this is finished, you can do it again. You can close your eyes and say out loud more reasons why that cannot be. That's not me, the third scene. It's not me because, finish that sentence. That can never be me ever again. Start and finish that sentence. That cannot be me because. And if you want some help, let's do the third and final one. That cannot be me. For the rest of my long life, because I'm lovable, I'm significant, I matter, I'm here for a reason. Love is available to me, I'm enough, I'm not dependent, I'm independent. I am able to meet all my needs. You needed praise or love or recognition or safety. Now you can give those to yourself, not just sometimes. But all the time. So just let yourself go deeper, knowing that over the next few days and weeks, it would really help you to continue to say that cannot be me because, that will not be me because, that will never be me ever again because you've taken off the tag that says it will always be like this. Will be like this forever and ever. Will be like this for the rest of my life. No, it won't. It isn't, it can't be, because you've just said it's not me because. And so when you're ready, you can just slowly, calmly, easily, effortlessly just open your eyes and just come back to your full awareness. And in my program, I'm Enough, you'll find that this is just the beginning. There are so many tailored endings that take you through why you don't have wealth or success or abundance, why your relationships aren't working. So there's 8 different modules and each one will take you through why your not enoughness is stopping you having health, wealth, love, success, confidence. And you'll find that the audio recordings within it are extraordinary and changing everything. But I hope you liked that. It was just a beginning, just a taste. And of course you can pause this, you can rewind it, you can do it several times, and each time you'll go back to key scenes. But remember, the scenes, even when they're traumatic, do not affect you. It's the meaning you attach to the scenes and the beliefs you have about the scenes that affect you. And your beliefs are yours to change. The meanings are yours to change. Your thoughts and words are yours to change. Change them now, and it will change your entire life. How did you find that?
Really powerful, really powerful. Yeah.
And what scene did you go back to, or scenes?
It were scenes. So the last one was even back in the womb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, many people do that. Tell me what was going on when you were in the womb.
I just didn't feel really welcome. Mm. I mean, my mother was 16 when she was pregnant with me, so it was kind of not planned and a very difficult situation. And the other scenes were, I would say, when I was about 4. So one was in kindergarten, where I was kind of locked in a little room because I was kind of nasty something. So they locked me away. And the other scene was in a conflict where with my mother, where she was really kind of overwhelmed with the situation, where I was angry and screaming, and she was overwhelmed with the situation, and I made some interpretation that it's about me because I'm not right. Yeah. So
it's really interesting scene, you know, in the womb, feeling not wanted, because people say, how could you go back to the womb? But in the womb, your pure sensation, hearing and feeling is everything, because there's nothing to see. And then being locked away just for being expressive. And so the interesting message you would have got is, I'm not wanted, and no one wants to hear what I have to say. And if I have an opinion, I just get punished for it. And other people can get angry, but I'm not allowed to be angry, because your mother could get angry and you couldn't. So you put all these events together and you think, well, that all made sense, but why am I carrying it with me now? Why am I still letting that impact me? You know, some of the most amazing people in the world weren't wanted. I mean, Steve Jobs was given up for adoption. Probably not an ideal role model, but, you know, what a genius, what a legacy he left behind. We can look at people like Oprah Winfrey and Tony Robbins, who both didn't have fathers that were present in their lives, and yet they've gone on to greatness. So the most important thing is to go, look, maybe I wasn't wanted, but I have a friend who spent $10,000 on IVF, who'd be an amazing mom, and she didn't get to have a baby. And how could that make sense? Some people want a baby and don't have one, and they'd be great parents. Other people, like my parents, didn't want me, brought me up to feel they shouldn't have had me. And the only way you can make sense of it is this: the universe wanted me to be here, wanted me to be me. It gave me skills and talents and gifts, and the universe that put me here will support me in everything that I do. And finally, just to help you even more, it's so effective. I want you to think of, if you'd had amazing parents, the best parents in the entire world, what would they have said to you? If you had a teacher that saw you as the best kid they ever had in their class, what would they have said? Because we all have these missing words. I wanted my mom to like me the most. I wanted a dad. I wanted to be his favorite. I wanted the teacher to like me. I wanted friends to like me. But I was an army kid, always traveling. In my case, my father was my own headmaster. So that was hard for me, because other kids always saw me as different. And as a kid, you just want to be the same. So take a minute and think about what you most wanted to hear. And later on today, say it. We all want to hear the same thing. It's not difficult. You're a great kid. How lucky I am to be your parent. You're smart. You're amazing. You're wonderful. I may be young when I had you, but you were meant to be here. Some of you may have parents, I was really old when I had you. You were an accident. Doesn't matter. Whatever you wanted to hear, I love you. I'm proud of you. We all want to hear that. I'm proud of you. You matter. You're significant. You're smart. You're interesting. You're wonderful. You're a gift. You're a gift to the world. You've got a talent, a value, something to share. Keep saying what you most wanted to hear. And please remember this. When you say those words a lot, your mind has no idea where they've come from. It doesn't really clock up. Well, Dad said that and Grandmother said that. If you say the words enough, they sink in like lotion on dry skin. And your mind doesn't care if it's fair trade lotion, organic lotion, or came from Target. It all goes in and does its job. So the words you want to hear, say them to yourself, because they have exactly the same impact as someone else saying them if you repeat them over time. And if you want to see more of this in action, go to imenough.com. You can take the program. I believe that you can trial the first two modules with a complete money back guarantee. But there's 8 modules all designed to change your life, and you will love them. And just go to imenough.com and you can see hundreds of reviews. Schools are using it, prisons are using it, rehab is using it, because it's so profound. And this is just a sample of what's in it. There's some amazing stuff. It's all directed to change your life, not in hours or weeks, days, in minutes, just like today.
Thank you so much, Marisa, for bringing your experience, your wisdom, your exercise into this summit. I appreciate it a lot, because I know you're really very busy traveling all over the world, sharing your amazing program. So I want to really thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me. And send me some feedback. Now that little girl who didn't feel wanted, you can say, well, I want her. I'm glad she's here.
Yeah. Indeed. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's been bye. And thank you to our audience, to you watching the video, listening to the audio. And I really hope from the bottom of my heart that you really can take something with you, as Marisa said, which can really help you changing your fundament of attitude in your life. Thank you so much for your commitment to your growth and for taking your steps further into a really positive, happy life where you are able to spread your gifts and your talents. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you so much.